Welcome to the Mindcore podcast. Mindcore, like hardcore for your brain. That's our new slogan, so you don't have to listen to 5 minutes of me trying to explain what the hell we're trying to do. Today's episode will be about the occult and beliefs in the occult and how the occult relates to contemporary society. And with us today, you've got me, Enrique Requero, and
Diana Sparks.
And also from the Random Bits of Geek podcast,
Reverend Grimes.
Yay! So we're going to hook you up with the perfect song to get you in the mood for our journey into this mysterium of the occult.
It's from the heavy metal soundtrack.
It's Veteran of the Psychic Wars by Blue Oyster Cult.
Woo!
Welcome back. So, as I said earlier, our topic today is going to be on the occult. And mostly because I have become quite an occult enthusiast over the last couple of years, and I've been jonesing to do this episode for a long time.
I think that a lot of people don't believe that the occult is a real thing.
Which is weird to me because, you know, I personally, to bring it over from my podcast for a minute, because this is something we're going to be talking about as this particular series. The Sandman, there's a character in the last big story arc. It's either Lyta Hall or her friend Carla, I think. One of the two, doesn't matter. But they say, I don't really believe in God, I don't really believe in Jesus, but I do believe in weird shit. And weird shit kind of encompasses the occult for me.
Is that how we're defining it? Like the occurrence of the strange, like the kind of reality-defying experiences?
No, I think that's one way to define it. I don't think it has to be just that. But
in the organization of that therein.
I think
you know
as
what
a
I mean?
Rational
like,
person,
Wiccans,
I'm just saying it's easier to believe
this. Thelemites, but there's Satanists. Like, I think most people would say there's no such thing. Or
that there are not even the people out there who are into it.
They know there's people that are into it because those people have been on, Montel Williams and stuff.
Well, what's funny is probably like 9 times out of 10, I would agree with anyone who was saying that it was all bullshit.
Yeah. Except you synced it.
I'm 100% into this shit now. But it's kind of, so I knew I wanted to really, like, talk about my background with this. So, like, I grew up, like, from moving to the United States from Chile. And I think that it was kind of, I was primed for it as a little kid without even realizing because Santeria type shit is so common down there. People don't even realize they're doing it. They're like, this saint.
That's maybe the sexiest thing you've ever said about your culture. I'm just telling you.
Well, Chileans are known for their self-depreciating senses of humor, but they're also very quick to depreciate you. but anyways, let's continue. This has always been kind of going on, people praying to saints and shit, specific saints for specific tasks. And then, you know, my dad's like a scientist, so he's a pretty much a hardcore atheist, and I grew up with that kind of environment. Like, they took me to church and stuff, And I had a lot of just horrible shit happen to me as I was a little kid, and I don't even want to go into it, but I felt such a need to, like, have some weird shit to believe in. And I picked up this book called The Life Forces, An Introduction to the Occult. I bought it again because I was so stoked.
That I got this when you were a kid.
Yeah, and I had it when I was like 12 or 13, and I read it, and I also read the Satanic Bible when I was about 13 or 12 years old.
I think that's a good age to do it for the first time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I really do.
I was super into it. I was super intensely into it right down to when I started hanging out with you guys when I was like 19 or 20. And at some point there, I became this fanatically, intensely fanatical, like, Christian guy. It was like that's a source of many, many funny and entertaining stories.
Well, to be fair, to an extent, everybody in this room drank of that Kool-Aid.
Well, I also argue, I have a blog called Occult Skeptic. I've never plugged it on the podcast before, but today it's kind of, yeah, it has to be done. That I talk about a lot about how basically in occultism, what a lot of these people have done is kind of like reconstructed, reverse engineered the psychological mechanisms that, because we didn't belong to it, at least, I mean, you came from a more conservative Baptist background, but when the shit we were all into together, that was like a charismatic Christian sect which believes that you become possessed by the Holy Spirit, as like the voodoo priests who are possessed by their loas. And that you make this gibberish.
Yeah, I'm just saying, this is what we have in America. How can Santeria not be sexier than this? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's not criticizing your culture at all. Mm-hmm. This is what we've got here, is the fucking holy rollers and the everything else.
I think these guys are real wizards. I love these holy roller guys. The guys who, like, get slain in the space. Like, Benny Hinn. Benny Hinn guy, he's very famous. Google him. I'll probably post a link of him. I love to post links of him.
Oh God, these people are on listening to the internet. They've got to know who Benny Hinn is.
Well, he waves his arms, and the whole audience falls to the ground because the power of Jesus is upon them. And I've been there when this happens. Like, I've actually gone to see him perform live.
Did you fall down?
No. I didn't know that. You went to see Benny Hinn live?
Yeah, and apparently, like, when somebody doesn't fall down, everybody behind them doesn't fall down either. But my friends and I, we were too big of pussies. We should have fallen down, and I will argue, like, as I make my case for why occultism is my chosen path in life, that I should have fallen down. It would have been an initiatory experience. I would have invoked a Jungian archetypal metaconsciousness of the deity. I would have been the god form slain.
Or you might have just been in Rocky Horror Picture Show, the Christian version.
Well, I think that
I feel like that at Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Rocky Horror Picture Show is definitely an initiatory occult ritual.
I have been both Columbia and Dr. Frankenfurter in the spirit, but honestly, I feel more like the latter, kind of manly.
Well, so if we're gonna continue to discuss, well, I should finish up, I guess, the story. Then there was Jesus. The Jesus shit happened, and there was a lot of funny stories.
I just want an example of that.
Ew, you know, I had to go to one of those fucking concerts in the big auditoriums where it was like Jesus bands playing, and in between the Jesus bands, they would talk shit on other music, and the guy, it was fucking awesome. Like, after this really, like, fucking ballless, goddamn boy acoustic band played about Jesus, this old preacher dude who was, like, such a fucking square, and he went up there and he was talking about, there is a band today that is corrupting our youth. And everybody was like, oh, right? And then he was like, this band is called Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And he said the words to heresy, but he said them kind of wrong. Like, he was like, your God is dead, and I don't care. If there is a hell, you will see me there.
That's one of my favorite all-time songs, probably. I grew up listening to that song.
Okay, but so there was the Jesus shit. Yeah, I love to hate the Jesus people as much as anybody, but let's continue with your story so we actually talk about the occult and not just how much we
know. Well, I don't want to miss out the brief Muslim chapter or
absolutely
the atheist chapter.
No, please, go.
I've been basically a spiritual tourist my whole life. I mean, when you start out as a fucking new age occultist at age 12, you're just, I think that's just your fucking lot in life. You're just wired that way. And I eventually had to try atheism. But before that, I converted to Islam. And it was a very strange, weird thing that just kind of came out of nowhere. I
didn't understand it.
I'm still very, very happy that I did it. And I have found it.
I didn't care.
An occult sect, which is very, very, very much vibing on what I was vibing on back then. It's called the Moorish Orthodox Church. Eventually, we should get some of their representatives to come on our podcast. They're like all like into like mystical Islam, and they think that Islam is actually fundamentally an anarchist kind of religion.
One of my favorite authors wrote a whole book that's basically a parable about Sufism.
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to get into. The problem is that contemporary Muslims are not like that. And I'm not hating, you know, it's just like in a lot of ways they're better than Christians. Like at the mosque, in my experience, like your personal religious experience is very much your own fucking business and nobody else's, and if you want to talk to the imam, he'll probably mostly be just like begrudgingly irritated and help you out. While it's like in like contemporary Protestant Christianity, you know, especially in the sect that we were in, the charismatic evangelicals, your behavior, your religious experience was everyone's business, and it was very intrusive. And
oh, they would come up and ask you,
yeah,
and they would touch you without, you know, I had a lady.
I did it too. And, I was totally a bad toucher.
This
one of the things
such,
I hate about that.
This is such a weird moment in my life that I'll probably like write a movie about it or something. But this lady came up, and this very petite woman, like 4'10", okay, she wore overalls. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But anyway.
What a darling creature.
She is. She's a wonderful human being. That's what made the experience so fucking weird, I think. But she came up to me, and she put her hand, she reached up and put her hands on my shoulders, and she said, "Your back has been broken open. You have been split in two.
That was the Holy Ghost.
And you've suffered, and I can see how you've suffered, but I'm telling you that you will stitch yourself up and you will be the light to the world."
Yeah, isn't that coming true?
That was fucking awesome.
See?
I felt like a princess of Jesus.
That lady could barely read 9 times out of 10. She was talking like that because she wasn't going through this psychological peak experience.
Yeah, it was awesome, kind of, in its own weird way, in its own, like, kind of sad, poetic way.
Well, the fact that we can kind of agree on that is really kind of what brought me back around. I mean, I was really hardcore into atheism. This podcast was initially started, and I'm sad that, you know, through some financial problems I have, and my computer's breaking and getting stolen, that I don't have those old episodes, but this started out basically as an atheist propaganda podcast, and I am totally down to have atheist propaganda on this podcast anytime, all the time.
See, I have this weird kind of soul boner for atheists, ironically. I think they're like sages on the mountains.
Yeah, definitely the ones I'm into.
I agree. Like, the people I know personally that are really hardcore atheists, like, for instance, our very tall friend. I love that guy. He's like the bodhisattva for me. I'm like, he's so peaceful. He's so chill. I love that guy. And I have kind of hippy-dippy feelings towards atheists. I'm sure some of them are assholes.
Well, so occulty type shit has made, not if they know you're an atheist, for the most part. That's been my experience. I went to like an atheist conference. I was a card-carrying member of the Center for Inquiry, and I would be again in a heartbeat. I'm a little sad that they had a split with their founder. Anyways, that's that just lets you know that I still keep a very watchful eye on atheism, and I support atheism as a political agenda to maintain separation of church and state. I also believe that the language of public discourse should be a scientific one, that I should not be allowed to go onto the Hall of Congress and say we need to do this to the education system because my fourth chakra was illuminated. You know, you have to have evidence and empiricism, but I think that something that occultists have figured out is that you can take kind of an empirical approach to your own psychology. And that, just that as a premise, I think any human being that is imaginative, that if they say, I can take my psychology and do weird shit to it.
You know how you achieve that? By taking hallucinogens.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I think that that's probably also kind of laid the seed, the whole step through the journey, because I've done hallucinogens in every single phase I've been in.
And you realize shit about the world. Yeah, no, I mean, we've been, as a culture, as a species, always taking hallucinogens, and that's when we have our most imaginative moments.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of magic is fucking real. And really, at least I like to think so.
And really, and for my atheist friends who are listening, and I hope you guys still are listening, because I really love and respect you.
Oh, yes, yes. The logical, rational side of me, like, thinks you guys are saints, like, quite literally, and I couldn't agree with you more.
So, but, you
but
know,
the romantic side is different.
If you have any skeptical doubts about this thing that Diana's saying about the use of ethnogenic drugs as a part of basically all primate history, just hit us up and I'll be happy in the comments section to have a very good discussion with references to support this argument. Interestingly enough, you know, in the last few seconds, we were interrupted because basically a giant pile of dishes just fell out of the kitchen.
It looked like 15 dishes. It was weird.
Little poltergeist activity for you. But, you know, so I believe where we were at is talking about the atheist phase. And what I wanted to say was that in atheism and in popular atheism, occult type activities have already made inroads, essentially, because meditation has shown a great deal of scientific efficacy for what they call positive psychology, which is basically like scientific, you know, psychology and neuroscience and psychiatry of like what people who are basically happy and successful are like. So traditionally, psychology until like the last 30 years was basically like, what's wrong with people? God damn. But recently, a few very brilliant psychologists and neuroscientists have started to be like, okay, well, let's look at people that are actually doing okay and what makes them like that. And they found that meditation creates those kind of benefits. And so, like, Sam Harris is one of the world's most popular atheist writers, and he advocates meditation to the point that he's actually like tricked scientists into going on meditation retreats. He was a bodyguard for the Dalai Lama. And this guy is like the guy who basically started the whole new atheist thing with his book, The End of Faith. So I started meditating, and the rest is history. I just jumped in the rabbit hole with my fucking para-schizophrenic mind. This is what happened.
Well, see, I think, you know, you can achieve those same happiness levels with music, the right music for you, mm-hmm. you know, or dance or anything that, like, shamans used to do. Like, I think it's really easy to access that level without any of the bangs and whistles, you know?
No, I totally agree. I just think the bangs and whistles, like, get me off. And I have a Jungian kind of belief about that. That basically we've had these kind of like same religious practices throughout human history for millions of years. Alan Moore, the comic book writer, argues in his essay Fossil Angels that there is no difference between cave painting, a magic spell, and like a modern framed work of art. And that they're all kind of on the same current. And, you know, and he says that the word magic is actually the best word for this current because it is this kind of a mystical experience that has these transcendental qualities. I think any real smart atheist can't really boohoo that.
Yeah, I feel like I'm having a magic experience when I connect with a piece of art, you know, or like a really wonderful piece of literature, you know, like when you're done reading that perfect book that really spoke to your soul and you're like, fuck yeah, my spirit is renewed. I think that's magic.
Well, about a level of 99%, I would say that that's all I think magic is. And that that's all really religion is. And that humans just seem to kind of need this shit. Well, so I was wanting you guys to kind of weigh in on that. Like, Revit Rives, do you think that art and religion are related? And if, and you know, or do you think that we need any kind of religious element whatsoever?
I think that when done properly, when done in the correct way, Art is the religion. The story is the religion. It is the magic. It is the everything, because it's what we do. We tell stories, and in whatever aspect of, you know, when we create a piece of art, you're imbuing it with some sort of backstory, with some sort of, it's a moment that's perfect, and it's frozen in time, and it's very cool, because then you start to view your own lives this way. You start to view, you know, this is the story that we're telling right now. This, what we're doing, is our story, and it's what we make of it. So I think that is the magic. So yeah, I think we do, but I think that's where the, I don't know, that's about the extent of the religion that I feel like I need in my life.
Well, you know, when you think about like what caused religion to rise the way that it did, a big contributor is like literacy. You know what I mean? So it kind of makes sense that those two aspects of it collided, you know, and it took like a belief in magic to get any fucking amazing thing done. And like the Egyptians, you know, they have this godhead, you know, the pharaoh. And through that sort of religious devotion and the ability to create that hierarchy, they built the fucking pyramids. That's magic, in my opinion, but it also, it's kind of easy to see.
It's interesting that you reference Egypt, because occultism is so deeply, deeply entrenched in Egyptian mythology. And
that's because it looks cool.
I could actually give you
at least partially a
really good historical cultural tracing of why that is. It's because of the Hellenization of Egypt. It's because of Alexandria. It introduced the Egyptian mystery cult to the West.
It's been
here ever since.
Like Bacchus, I believe in that kind of magic. Party magic. I believe in party magic. When you're all having a really great time and everybody's kind of manic and ecstatic, and it's just like you all feed off of each other, and
that's what I'm saying.
Awesome.
It's from my standpoint, it's the story that you're telling at that moment. And that is the magic. And I think magic and religion is a very personal thing, but I think it can also be a very, very much a shared group experience.
Okay, so I'll ask you guys this question. Do you believe that believing in magic, you can manipulate events outside of your normal realm of control?
I am 100% sure that you do that through what's called the initiatory process, which is that you transform yourself through the practices to generate new habits that produce outcomes. Now, 99, I will bank on that. I will take that to anyone who wants to. Like, we can design experiments and try it out. Not for, like, anything. I mean, I can't say, you know, right now I'm going to make Venus 40 meters closer to Earth or 4,000 meters. You know, it's like shit in your life, you know, making yourself get through life. But I've been into this occult shit deep enough that I have a little bit of what Reverend Grimes talks about with the weird shit. And at this point, this is where I would probably begin to annoy my atheist friends, brothers and sisters in evolution.
I'm going to be like, I believe in ghosts because my uncle saw a ghost.
No. I won't ever be that bad, but I'll definitely get Star Trek-y on you and trying to explain all kinds of strange phenomena. But Reverend Grimes has a podcast called Random Bits of Geek, which is a comic book podcast, and I think that comic books have really been kind of my guide through this whole process, because
of course they're the modern day audience's introduction to it through Alan Moore or Grant Morrison,
even really back to fucking Kirby and Stan Lee. Those guys were part of the New York occult scene in the 70s. Those guys were, I mean, I don't know. Please, comic book nerds who know, correct me. But from what I've read, it would not surprise me at all to find out that Kirby and Stan Lee were smoking opium at an orgy with a naked girl as a human altar.
I think we're going to write the biography of Jack Kirby, and we're going to include that regardless.
We should write a false biography of Stan Lee and publish it as a comic book. Don't steal my idea. This is our idea.
But yes, I hear recently there's been kind of a revolution, and Alan Moore, I think it's fair to say, was the one who started it. Or that really kind of out of the closet, like, okay, this comic book you're reading right now is a magic spell. You are now participating. Look it up, bitches. Alan Moore is an interesting character, and he deserves his own episode on everyone's podcast on Earth.
Well, it's amazing how much Alan Moore and then Grant Morrison after him both actively practiced magic in their writing and got so many people to buy into it that would have never been exposed to
it
otherwise.
Didn't you participate in the metasigil for Grant Morrison? I would in a heartbeat.
Grant Morrison.
Let me just say that.
I consider it a great regret that I did not have an opportunity to participate. I consider Grant Morrison to be one of the great enlightened masters, like on the level of Jesus or Buddha or...
So tell us what you did for the spell.
Okay, well, basically it was a Save the Invisibles campaign, more or less, because the Invisibles, he started... It's kind of his take on magic. It's kind of his take on really everything, on the universe. And it's this fantastic piece. Well, at some point during, I think it was the first year, this was the mid-90s, so my memory is a little hazy here. But at some point in the first year or so, there was basically, he designed a meta sigil and passed it on to everybody in the letters columns, which is something comic books used to have in the back of them a long time
ago. So the meta sigil, was it actually a sigil, like a design that he made in a psychic trance?
No, the idea is for you to make your own sigil.
Okay.
For you to do it. And then at the same time, on the same day, and I think it was Thanksgiving, or it was right before Thanksgiving, right after, at any rate, everybody makes the sigil and masturbates on the sigil.
Which reminds me that before this episode ends, we have to discuss sex magic.
Yeah, absolutely, I participated. And, you know, whatever. The series went on another six volumes, whatever, until he decided he was damn well done with it.
In that series, everybody should read that. If you want to really understand how I could be into this occultism shit, you have to read Robert Anton Wilson's Illuminatus trilogy, and you have to read The Invisibles. Even though I'm just starting with The Invisibles, it's such an illuminated text. It's so deep. And if I had had that book when I was a teenager, it would have probably saved me a lot of pain.
It essentially explains almost completely what I believe.
We should post that picture of him where you can see his wiener and his underwear.
For the occult. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay. That's my meta sigil right there. Everybody has to look at that.
Right. Well, So the occult is kind of a big expanse, and if we, you know, just to kind of move things along, because I do want to hit on some kind of, like, specific topics in it, I just wanted to kind of go over some terms. We have, basically, what I'm going to be talking about mostly is a part of the occult that's called the Hermetic Tradition, which was began by a group called the Golden Dawn in England in, like, the late 1800s, early 1900s, and it had a lot of really awesome writers in it, a lot of awesome artists.
That sounds so romantic. The goth girl in me is just totally into that.
Well, in that club was a gentleman by the name of Aleister Crowley, who I like to think of as kind of a pre-incarnation of G.G. Allen, and kind of like I've recently taken to call him the first beatnik. It's hard to really capture why, because Aleister Crowley was very pompous, and, you know, and he had a terrible reputation, and it's hard to understand why anyone would ever like him. So
and yet in his circles, one of the most powerful men. Just
in my opinion, he conquered the Golden Dawn by force,
and
while dressed like Anubis, I believe I'm
just an amazing man. But yeah, a complete dick, just a complete, you know, you just read the cold hard history, and it's like, why?
Well, so Aleister Crowley defined magic, and he spelled it with a CK, which is
which he did quite on purpose.
Yeah, yeah, and this is you know, it's because he had a very specific definition for it, which is to affect results through to be in alignment with the will, which, you know, could really mean anything from some creepy, weird Scanners shit, like that movie Scanners, where you blow up somebody else's head with your mind. Or it could be, you know, I need to quit smoking cigarettes. I think I'm
right here that entire different little sub-belief systems and ways of looking at Crowley and his work has sprung up just through that one thing.
Oh, well, right. I mean, I've spent a lot of time on occult forums, especially our occult on Reddit, and I'm going to post this on there and tell them all to listen to it, so hopefully they love the shout out. And I read up a lot on this kind of stuff, all the way from Wicca, which is kind of like, in my opinion, mostly just a part of the normal New Age movement, ranging to like hardcore Luciferians and like Satanists. Like, I would call this kind of a certain kind of spectrum in the occult. Everybody agrees on Crowley's definition, and they don't agree on much. He basically like coined the standard, and for that he's always going to be given props. My affection for him goes much deeper than that.
I'm sexually attracted to him.
I would definitely have sex with him if I encountered him, but it would probably be part of some strange psychological game. But he I don't want to dwell on him too much just in case I forget anything. So, you know, kind of from that whole era sprang the whole New Age movement, Wicca, as we've already kind of mentioned, Crowley, and you know, there was like, it's just, there are parts of American history and European history in the recent past that people don't really realize, like the Nazis had like clubs in their political movement that was totally devoted to studying like the magic of the like,
right, pre-Christian sphere of destiny, and that even the earlier than that, mm-hmm, the pre-Christian stuff, the very earliest Christian myths and pre-Christian myths, and trying to obtain magic even possibly as a way to fucking rule the world.
I heard that they would bone their ladies on like the supposed burial sites of German heroes. So they would like imbue their baby with their spirit.
Again, we need to come back to sex magic.
No, this seems like a very noble pursuit.
If given even like 4 minutes,
have a little Wotan baby.
Let's go to the graveyard.
If given even like 4 minutes to discuss sex magic, I will make an argument that everyone should be having sex magic.
Well, then just go for it.
Well, I mean, okay, well, so it'll eventually come to this. Sex magic is another reoccurring current, like, through most occult traditions. You'll find it just as much as the Crowley definition in some way, shape, or form in every club that's into occultism. And it ranges from basically not ejaculating so that you have all this kind of, like, pent-up sexual tension, which is just supposed to make you spiritually stronger.
Isn't that also in Taoism?
Yeah, no, these guys love Taoism, and they love, like, weird tantric yoga practices. And basically everybody agrees that doing that to a certain extent is useful. But there's also, like, the idea of having an orgasm while envisioning a result, like in the sigil magic. This is the kind of sex magic that Crowley was very much into. And that the Ordo Templi Orientis, which is the modern, like, what's still standing today, this is Crowley's legacy, along with this group called the Abbey of Thelema. But they've kind of reconstructed post-Crowley. And Crowley was at the helm of the OTO until he died, basically, on some level. And his followers now are mostly in the OTO, or at least follow the OTO. There's probably, for every OTO member, there's probably like 20 Thelemites that will never join a goddamn thing, no matter what. But they keep an eye on the OTO and what it's saying. And there is kind of a common link between all of us. And there are Thelemite groups that are not part of that, that are like the reform movements of it.
But so his legacy is still, in one way, shape, or form, very much in place, yeah, it sounds like. So,
and we can't leave out Masonry. That's, you know, before we go into the OTO tunnel.
I think you should talk about Masonry, but I think first what you should do is play a song.
Okay.
And that'll give us a logical place to break.
Okay, well, here comes, which Nick Cave song is this?
Hard On For Love.
Yay, that's a very good one in this juncture. Hey!
For she let the cherry bleed, and that the moon is steeped in milk and blood, that I steal like a rabbit from her.
Okay, so all this stuff is also related to the Masonic tradition. I wouldn't say that Masons are occultists, though occultists are extremely well represented within the Masonic community, and they often communicate with the rest of us. And the OTO was a branch of Masonry when it started, which it started before Crowley. Crowley himself was a Mason to the 33rd degree. He got initiated to the 33rd degree in Mexico City. which I think is Latino. I'm very proud of this. mystical Jewish tradition known as Kabbalah is very deeply a part of this. Yoga, I think that every time an occultist in history has encountered yoga, they have done everything in their power to learn as much of it as they could. Hindu symbology is deep, as deep as Egyptian symbology at this point in history. The tarot, occultism is very much into the tarot, and you'll find that occultists don't really use the tarot the way it's traditionally used, which is to tell the future. Occultists will use the tarot to meditate on the cards and to try to understand each card's symbology as what it means in their life, what these symbols would mean in their own life, and they'll do weird spells with them and shit like that. It's very much the cards are a meditative, instructional, visual text. And Crowley even called it the
book. And you've done this a little bit, right?
I've actually gotten to be known for doing this on the internet thanks to my blog.
Okay, well, all right. While you do this, would you describe any results that you feel you have? How does applying this to your life?
My psychological resilience has probably tripled or quadrupled since I started doing all this shit. I'm very much prone to anxiety. I've suffered from psychological problems probably my whole life. And ever since I've gotten into occultism, again, as an adult, and taking a responsible and kind of like, you know, not too just buck wild approach, I find that the first result is that I have greater psychological resilience. When I have to deal with major problems, I find myself more calm and rational and able to deal with them. I have experienced definitely more artistic inspiration, and that alone is worth it. I would have been, if I knew that was going to be one of the results, I have more ideas than I could produce work for, which is a good problem for any artist. And I believe that my inner social relationships have also improved drastically because in occultism, it gives you a lot of interesting tools for caring about your friends.
I still think you're an asshole.
You do not.
Not really. I'm just kidding. No, I like having magic in my life. That sounds so corny. I like it when I have magic in my life.
Who doesn't?
It ups my enjoyment of my day. It makes me happy. It gives me happiness. Like, just believing that, you know, I finished that amazing novel. Like, 100 Years of Solitude. The way I felt at the end of that novel, that was magic. I don't care. I love him. Oh,
well,
my God.
I mean, Gabriel Garcia Marquez,
yeah,
having lived his whole life in Colombia and been very well traveled Latin America, I'm sure he's been hanging out with the saints and the angels and the Yoruba African deities that are now ubiquitous in all of Latin American candle magic. It's just like in Latin America, this shit is ubiquitous. Even, you know, like people who are kind of atheistic will defend it to a certain extent in Latin America. That's also kind of another interesting link, is that the word freethinker, and I've always gotten off on this ever since I learned this, it used to not just mean atheist. It should used to actually mean both atheist and New Ager. Like in
right.
the 1800, late 1800s, early 1900s, the term freethinker was very much as likely to mean like a total unwilling to compromise about anything skeptic as it was to mean someone who believed in Ouija boards and crystal gazing.
Well, okay, I'll just change the direction here just a little bit because you reminded me of something. Do you think that these kind of belief systems can cause harm? And I'll cite an example, which would be like some African communities who, you know, you read about in the news that they kill somebody because they thought they transformed into a, you know, like a goat that raped their wife or like some outlandishly unbelievable shit. Yeah. And it's that they kind of have that whole occulty magic vibe in their
lives, but
it's ruining them.
I also think that that horrible abuses are committed in contemporary Christianity. I also think that horrible abuses occur in like really tight knit like atheist groups that can get kind of culty. I think that that ideas, dangerous ideas, are kind of just a part of life. You as a human being, you have to make some decisions, and you have to have some tools with which to make those decisions. Can you fuck yourself up with those tools? Yes. This is, I'm a Nietzschean. I believe that life is hard, and that it's, you will be destroyed. So, you know, you must tread cautiously. Unfortunately, very few people have the strength to really deal with life, which is another reason I'm really into all this occult shit, is because Crowley also made a religion that was supposed to go with magic for him. It's called Thelema. And Thelema, the religion of Thelema, basically has some very basic tenets, the most important of which being the idea of the true will. And the true will, to a Christian, if I said that the true will is the will of God, is that what Thelemites believe the will of God is the true will. Because they believe that there's kind of like a sun, like a vast energy orb of superpower. Like, I'm just making an analogy, like shooting out like what the universe wants. And you have a current in that energy, but it's still kind of one vast energy. It's very, it could get kind of Hindu. But this is what Thelemites mean when they say, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. It doesn't mean like, go jerk off at KFC. Now, it doesn't mean that jerking off at KFC is not your true will. You know, Crowley, I think part of his whole character that he played in life was to show that your true will could be on a vast spectrum of things. But this true will is like your inspiration. It's the thing that in your life, like that you are really built to fulfill. And now, as an atheist, and I still consider my default mode to be atheist, I think that the true will just represents like you basically figuring out your genetic programming and your social programming and your mimetic programming enough to know what really does best fit you in your circumstances. But to be attuned to that and to kind of like be mindful of that and to attack that is something most human beings don't ever do. That's the real perplexing question to me, is why is it so hard for human beings to get off their asses and want something and then act enough to get it? Like real shit, not just like I want a plasma TV, but like I want this problem that all humans have to be solved. You know, or I want to express this idea with utter perfection.
Well, I mean, there's been people like that in history. Tesla comes to my mind.
Well, Tesla was an occultist.
Was he really?
That was so neat. He was a Hindu, and he would electrocute himself in Hindu rituals that he invented, like a chaos magician, like Grant Morrison. He was like, electricity is my magic. I'm going to electrocute myself and talk to Shiva. I mean, he was like an Eastern European guy. He probably just read about it hanging out with Mark Twain, who was probably also an occultist, even though he was an atheist.
That's a really sexy story for me. Well, that's really hot. I would have fucked Tesla in a heartbeat.
Well, another like kind of central tenet of Thelema that's kind of that I would want to address in this conversation, and I would love to actually, before we move on to that, what do you guys think about the true will? Is this something you could that you buy into? Is it just, you know, a bunch of gibberish? What do you think?
I know that thinking that way helps me. You know, like with anything, it's not perfect, you know, but when I do think stuff like, I want to be whatever. Like, I want to make all A's this semester. That's what I do. Okay, sorry, I'm a nerd. But, like, I'll be like,
that's magic.
Yeah, I am going to get a 4.0. By God. You know, I don't care what kind of pressure I have to put on myself. And I usually wait till the last minute, so that's part of the pressure, to be fair. Like, I'm like, I will write an A paper in one day.
You know, this reminds me of, and I'm glad it reminded me of this because it's so funny. I read, like, occultism was really popular in New York in the 70s. It's like when Iggy Pop and, like, David Bowie were butt-fucking each other.
Sexy.
And one guy who had, like, been through that, who was kind of famous as a writer in general, he wrote an essay about his experiences, and he said, I describe my occult phase as radical self-help and sales tactics.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it for me, man. I you know, and before I have to take a test, like, I will ask whatever deity, like, the subject would apply to best. Like, you know, when I do a classics class, I'm like, Juno, be with me. Come on.
Oh, wait till you start studying the Ars Goetia and you start learning that there are 72 demons to cover all problems.
Yeah, I would totally apply that. Yeah, but like when, you know, in German, it was like...
Oh, now we're going to get Father hits from Odin. People that say that we're dumb because we took the Goetia too lightly.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, then that's
I don't take any of this lightly, to be honest. Like when I'm like, Odin, come on, be with me. I feel it, man.
Well, that's more magic.
I'm in my heart, I'm like, Odin is with me right now.
And that's kind of
as ridiculous as that sounds.
That's the strange paradox, is that I also, even though I describe myself as an atheist, work to attain as close to that as I can when I'm doing my magic. That I become convinced that I'm really interacting with some kind of deity. Now then when I come back to Earth, you know, I sit down and I work the math back out.
Yeah, like, so, I worked myself up to feel that way. And I don't think there's anything wrong with working yourself up to feel that way. I think that's how you really experience your consciousness, and that's really what makes you human.
What's the difference between that and method acting?
Not really anything. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think there's a huge difference. I think that talking about anything like true will, where you're basically essentially pumping yourself to do this, to have this desired result, I think it's, maybe it's the fascist in me, but I think it's good for me. I think it's good for my group of friends and my group of people that I believe are appropriate. And then I
Crowley really would probably believe that everybody who is living up to their potential should have a strong inner fascist. and I don't think any of my fellow my brothers or sisters will disagree with that.
Yeah, there's something, yeah, discipline. I think that's an aspect of magic, you know? Like, think about all the monks in the temple, you know? They achieve that sense of magic, and it's very real, I'm sure, for them. I don't know, I would love to try it, but they do it through discipline.
Crowley wrote yoga books that he took all the relaxed postures out of them. Like, he had like this.
You will do tree for 30 minutes.
Yeah, no, they had in the Abbey of Thelema with AA, which still exists. I'm not as familiar with the AA as I am the OTO, but I know that many people are in both organizations. I'm in the OTO, full disclosure. But in the AA, one of the initiations is that you have to stay in a yoga asana posture for 30 minutes with a saucer of water on your head without spilling it.
I would be soaked, unfortunately.
But this is like a really early initiation, too. This is like the first degree.
Next, you have to go arm to arm with somebody and put a cigarette in between them, and whoever chickens out first doesn't get to do it that year.
I don't know. I mean, really, it's... it would be, some of the people that I know that are in the AA, it would be very hard to imagine them doing that. But I know that Crowley would do things like cut himself and things in his rituals. So nothing really would surprise me.
I'm hurting myself with Girl Scout cookies right now.
But this is an example of how much he revered discipline, and he considered discipline to be holy. And that really, like, your job as a Thelemite, if you're practicing this particular path of occultism, that you have to basically make your will your religion, and that you have to pursue it. But
you know what I think the equivalent in like the mainstream religions is for that?
Mm-hmm.
Is obedience. And that's why they suck. And that's why they're boring.
Well, you were definitely in agreement with Crowley. He wrote that in many different ways. And Crowley himself was a religious tourist, just like I was. Only, you know, he was a rich European dilettante, so he...
So he could essentially say, I'm going to make my own.
Right.
And enough people would go, you throw good parties. But I like getting naked and fucking. That's good.
But he also studied for years with Sufi mystics in North Africa. He would climb the Himalayas regularly. If he didn't go sit with some llamas for a few months, I would be very surprised. And the way I actually learned about Crowley and got really into Crowley, because I was, you know, for like a year or two, I was just a meditating atheist. I had no interest in any kind of occultist shit whatsoever. But I read this book called Cannabis, A History. Everybody who listens to Mindcore podcast by now should know that I am an I have been known to occasionally experiment with marijuana.
It's terrible. It's against the law. It's illegal.
I'm the conclusions have not yet come in. But this book is a really great book that's not just like a propaganda book about pot, but a book about the history of pot and when did humans start smoking it, why did we start smoking it. And it turns out that in the West, that outside of North Africa and India, the consumption of marijuana for intoxication really kind of starts with Crowley. Like, it had happened a little bit among really, really wealthy dilettante circles before that, but Crowley was the one who really created, like, the first Western pot scene.
Thank you, Mr. Crowley.
And that was... And when I started to read about that from this guy, and this guy is not a Thelemite, this guy is not, like... He was not trying to, like, recruit people into this guy, but after reading that, and I had to learn more, basically.
Who is this fella who brought so much magic into my life?
Well, so the next key concept for Thelemites and many occult groups is the Holy Guardian Angel. And this is another one that I would love to have you guys weigh in on. So I'll give the standard definition. So when Crowley created Thelema in the modern system of magic, he had an encounter with a being called Iwas, which for all intents and purposes may have just been him and his wife Rose doing a weird intense psychological NLP roleplay exercise.
What was its name again?
Iwas.
That sounds like ayahuasca.
Well, Iwas is holy to all Thelemites, is one of the great archangels of the Aeon. But they were like hanging out in the museum and his, and I think it was their honeymoon. And he always was trying to get, if you were a girl and you had red hair and Crowley was putting his weenie in you, he was going to try to make some kind of spirit talk through you. He was really into that. It was, and you know, and I'm saying this
an admirable goal,
tongue in cheek, but again, back to the original topic of sex magic, you know, Crowley believed that sexual arousal gave him real power. And I think that that's kind of one of the more subtle things about the occult philosophy that I've kind of recently just started to really learn about and I've gotten really into, which is this idea that, like, when you manipulate your sexual awareness, you manipulate your sexual arousal, you try to not just, like, go with the flow or whatever, but actually, like, become aware of it and be more conscious of it, it does have some interesting effects. Anyways.
Like the dishes in your kitchen fall?
Well, you know, there would be a lot of contemporary occult traditions that would believe that you could cause a poltergeist with sex magic.
Do any of them believe in ghosts?
I would say that probably, I can't speak for in Thelema specifically because there seem to be so many atheists in Thelema, though it's not the dominant philosophy, but definitely in the occult scene in general, belief in ghosts is probably the default. I definitely didn't believe in ghosts when I got started into this shit, but I have reserved a 1% of my mind for intense agnosticism.
Yeah, it's the part that Art Bell came in and plowed when you were young.
Yeah, I
keep this open.
I love Art Bell, and you know, and I do reserve, you know, a kind of a polite agnosticism when talking to occultists, because maybe ghosts don't exist, but maybe these guys have figured out a really cool technique for invoking a multiple personality disorder.
I don't think that ghosts are real, and I think that everybody who thinks ghosts are real, like, their uncle told them that he saw one, and that's why they believe in them. And, like, you know, I told this guy one time...
My whole family will claim to have seen ghosts.
Yeah, I was talking to this guy one time, and I said, I don't believe in ghosts. I think I was on mushrooms. That's probably why I was, like, confessing that. I was like, I don't believe in ghosts.
He should have just given you more mushrooms.
And he was like... Well, my uncle saw a ghost. Are you calling him a liar? That's why I don't fucking believe in ghosts. And I never will, out of stubbornness. Fuck you. Well, fuck your logic.
Can you imagine skeptics? They have to face... poor skeptics have to face these kind of inane rebuttals constantly.
Yeah, it's not... It's ridiculous. But I do believe in alien interference. fuck yeah, I love aliens. Aliens are cool.
Well, that's also a very common belief in the occult and very relevant to the discussion of the Holy Guardian Angel, because Crowley didn't just have this encounter that I was kind of like teasing or whatever. It's that everybody who is into this shit should have this encounter. And it wasn't just him, but like John Dee, who's a name that we should also bring up, who Alan Moore basically dismisses Crowley as kind of a fun guy.
Right.
Which I think is a great, especially considering how much Alan Moore hates everything else.
Well, I do believe that there is magic in having a fantastic party.
But he considered John Dee to be the real father of modern occultism. And John Dee was essentially Queen Elizabeth's magician. And he would just, him and his buddy, Edward Kelly, would sit and stare at a black mirror for hours and hours and have visions of angel languages. And eventually they fucked each other's wives. Back to sex magic again.
Ta-da, magic.
Everything is magic with sex.
Okay, well, what kind of magician was Rasputin? Because he's cool and scary.
Rasputin is considered holy in Satanism. Anton LaVey's Satanism, which Satanism is a religion I have such great love and sympathy for. And when I was starting out this podcast, and it was an atheist propaganda podcast, I was lucky enough to get Peter Gilmore, who is a current high priest of the Church of Satan, and other really great Satanists. The guy whose his name is Casey right now, he was the host of the podcast Satanism Today. These are just wonderful guys, and their beliefs are wonderful. But there's Anton LaVey didn't think Satanists should hang out.
Little Satan parties.
Satanism is basically these days is you can read stuff published by Satanists. They hang out on the internet. Unfortunately, racism is very popular in Satanism, but it's a kind of a weird kind of racism. It's a kind of like, I have the right to think that guy's not going to that black guy's not going to tip his waitress. That's the kind of racism that Satanists are into. But you know, it's. As a Latino guy, when blacks are getting shit on, it's probably, I probably don't want to stand too close. and it's certainly not ubiquitous. Satanists are crazy individuals, but Anton LaVey would have defined the magic of Rasputin as a kind of like, he redefined ESP, Anton LaVey did, as when all of your senses are really aware, that there was not another sense, but that if you really would just listen to your senses, you could manipulate people intensely. And he basically preached this his whole life. Like, most satanic magic outside of the ritual chamber is just you, like, acting, basically, and being a really badass actor and being very, very aware of your opponent or your friend or whoever's mannerisms and body and what they're doing and read it.
That sounds like a sociopath there.
Well, I mean, Satanism is popular with sociopaths, but it's also. But I've also met a lot of real bleeding heart sweetie poos. You know, it's this kind of thing. Like this Nietzschean thing that I mentioned earlier, that we cannot escape dangerous ideas. Christianity is a dangerous idea. It is just as dangerous as Satanism. We have seen the destruction it wreaks. It's.
We clearly have, also a haven for sociopaths.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We all, you know, individual humans have to be responsible for their ethics.
Like these goddamn cookies.
And belief systems can be manipulated ethically. And, you know, some are more resistant to it, like Islam or Christianity, for example. But in occultism, you know, reform is easy. Probably too easy. Well, so the Holy Guardian Angel is supposed to be a spirit that's like, that one definition for it could be like your perfected self. Another definition could be like just literally like your guardian angel, like a celestial being that's been said to watch over you through the karmic cycle. It could be just a psychological projection of like the best things that you admire to help guide you to achieve more of those things. Crowley was known to denounce any one of those definitions while adamantly pronouncing one of them. There's like a roulette wheel. It's like, this one is true, the others are false. At least this is what Robert Anton Wilson said about it. So, and I believe it.
I think I've decided that what I believe is different like 4 times since we've been sitting here doing this, for whatever that's worth, you know.
Well, I mean, then you're in, you're definitely have some occult type thinking. In chaos magic, which is a more modern occult tradition, that was invented in the 80s, which is very popular in the comic book scene, especially with like DC Vertigo comics, Alan Moore, Garth Ennis is into this shit too, isn't he?
What about Warren Ellis?
Yeah, that's...
I think Warren Ellis seems to be more into just the ideas of super science. And, you know, I guess it's its own kind of occultism, really.
Yeah, I mean, that could definitely be figured out. I consider the transhumanist scene to have a lot of overlap with the occult scene. That's a good example. And the transhumanists in general are very atheistic, so there's that link again. Well, anyway, so Holy Guardian Angel, what do you think?
Well, I always imagine that if somebody's looking over me, it's a dude. Does that make my perfected self a dude?
Well, I mean, that brings up the idea of pandrogyny, which is a term I learned on the Thelema Now podcast.
That's because I have a mustache, isn't it?
But it was, the pandrogyny is the idea that basically there's kind of a divine sex magic state where you don't transcend gender like I escape gender, but you're like all gender. You're both Mars and Venus intensely at will. And not everybody, so pandrogyny is not like a commandment or whatever, but I sympathize. My HGA, I usually envision as female, though there is a male version.
Is he a twink?
No, hell no.
Are you the twink?
The masculine version of my HGA is definitely a celestial warlord of the highest caliber. But you know, when I started out like trying to think of the HGA and like how I was gonna approach it, I hearkened back real strongly to my Christian background, and you know, because in the sect that we were in, and wise people who were in the sect did not indulge this very much, but I was really too high on it. I was addicted to it. You're supposed to talk to God, like your internal dialogue. It's supposed to be the voice of God.
Can I get closer to the mic and do that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the three of us have had many misadventures. And,
this is my entire reaction to the concept of an HGA, though, and I think it's because of my intense Christian upbringing. Mm-hmm. I can't get past it. No, there's you. There's you. That's what you've got. It's just you. And you don't need Jiminy Cricket on your shoulder. You don't need Big Bad Death Knar standing behind you. And you certainly don't need some fucking celestial cosmic being, because that's bullshit. That means you did too many drugs while you were reading many issues of Silver Surfer.
This is the thing. I'm going to feed you so much DMT at some point that you're going to see your Holy Guardian Angel.
Well, you know, I really find the aesthetics of, like, what mainstream people, like, consider angels to be so fucking obnoxious that I want to rebel against that idea completely.
Well, my first vision of my Holy Guardian Angel was the Aztec death goddess Mictlacahuasca. So that's definitely not a contemporary idea of an angel. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I'm more abstract than that. It's supposed to be abstract. Help me out, but I don't envision it really.
In chaos magic, the term they use for the guardian angel is the Algoides, which is a cooler term, probably.
Yes.
Because it doesn't carry that weight, and the Algoides, your inner genius, is another way to think about it. You know, if you're not into it, do what thou wilt. Show me the whole world.
I like the latter, like imagining your perfected self. Like, I get that, but like, I want to imagine it as me.
Well,
not as a separate.
The only reason I use the term Holy Guardian Angel as opposed to Agoides or Daemon or any of the other terms, inner genius, that are used in occult circles, is because it's the most common one, and that's definitely Crowley's fault. He was on John Dee's nuts. He thought. Crowley, who was a supreme out of the closet narcissist, like who thought he was the shit in all situations,
Are there a lot of in-the-closet narcissists? I'm just curious.
But when he was doing his weird...
Secretly think I'm awesome.
When he was doing his weird past life regression, he, instead of saying that he was John Dee, who was the great magician, he said that he was Edward Kelly, who was basically just, like, nibbling on John Dee's chode and fetching him drinks. Like, Edward Kelly was the most useless. He tried to run away from John Dee at some point. He had got his ear cut off for being a
pussy.
So that was the guy Cucroli identified with in the relationship with John Dee.
Here, this is of my body.
Oh. Okay, well, so, you know, there's a lot to be said about the Crowley stuff, and we're going to have Joseph Thebes from the OTO, who's a very active guy, and he has an Ouster Crowley for President 2012 campaign, and he's agreed to be on the podcast, so we'll go into more depth with him.
All right, I'm in.
What are some other juicy occult topics we could hit before we close?
What about, like, Eyes Wide Shut? Is that a real, like, thing? Like, are there cool orgies like that?
Definitely, but not as official functions of any of the major organizations.
So how do you go to these sexy parties? Or is that a secret?
You make real relationships with people who are into the kind of shit you're into.
That sounds like a lot of work.
In the organizations. But luckily for you, I got that handled.
I'm like, I just want a, like, a free pass. I want to win it off the radio.
But it wouldn't... It wouldn't be like...
Pick up your mask and your secret entry code.
Yes!
You know, more than likely it wouldn't be like you didn't know what the hell was going on. You would know that everybody was going to be fucking and naked and have masks on. And it would not...
But wouldn't it be more fun if it was a surprise? Well, I'm just saying.
You know, about
my birthday's coming up.
And that the Moorish the people that I saw that threw a party that was the closest to that were the Moorish Orthodox Church people.
Well, I think we've picked our path.
And their belief is called ontological anarchism.
Well, that sounds kind of nice. I like it. Sounds scientific.
Well, it's like really hardcore postmodernism, basically, is one way to put it, or Dadaism. But with Islam, like, you use the Islamic language, the Islamic symbolism, and they believe that there's a tradition of this in Islam that dates back to the Prophet Muhammad.
Well, it's kind of neato.
These people were the people who invented weed.
How do they feel about symbols? Because, like, I know that's a big part of the Islamic tradition, not to, like, symbolize anything, but that seems like a big occult thing.
Oh, the Moorish Orthodox Church would not be offended by people making images of the Prophet Muhammad. At all. They would probably encourage it.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about that real quick. Like, symbolism is, like, a huge part of occultism.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean,
so break it down.
Especially for me. I have my own variation of the theory of magic. I have the Enrique Requero school of magic. Which I call memecraft. And memes are a term that was coined by super atheist Richard Dawkins in his book The Selfish Gene. They've become something that has been scientifically studied by some people like Susan Blackmore, philosopher of science Daniel Dennett, who's also a big time arch atheist. He writes about them a lot in his philosophy books. Memes, the idea basically of memes is anything that any behavior, idea, symbol, whatever that can be replicated and communicated and that changes is going to have its own kind of agency. Now, what occultists are going to want to think when they hear that is that ideas have their own minds, but traditional meme theory does not say that at all. It's just like it's a virus. It's happening on accident. It's chaos. And that we're getting ridden by this chaos, that the memes use us to replicate. Where consciousness fits into that is something that's argued by meme theorists all over the place, like in the spectrum. I definitely, at this point in my life, I'm convinced that there is some kind of memes, and that they do follow these kind of evolutionary rules. And I think that we've been evolving with the memes for millions of years, and that this is from this kind of emerges something that builds up into, like, Jungian archetype.
Well, yeah, and that absolutely makes sense. Like, you know, hand axes, you know, Well, actually, hand axes might be a bad example because we've had hand axes since before we were human beings. But, like, okay, let's say any kind of tool.
Well, we've had memes since before we were human beings.
I guess that's true, too. Okay, so, yeah, hand axes. Like, what, you know, maybe it was developed individually in a few places. Maybe. But it also probably, that was the result of communication, and that's what makes us unique animals. You know, we're not specially adapted for anything except for communicating.
Well, and, you know, interestingly enough, like, to think about that and to bring up the transhumanist again, if I may, like, I think that from what I know about the transhumanist idea, that memes, memetics, predicts that as we become more superior communicators by using things like the internet, that the memes will basically shepherd us into the singularity so that they can replicate at exponential levels.
Whoa, Cronenberg.
I mean, if you've ever seen me watch Videodrome, you'll watch me have a religious experience. Long live the new flesh.
You'll fall down in the aisle between the pews, kicking up your skirt. Hollering.
But I think that I have a lot in my memetic magic, you know, I believe that we as humans have ethics and that ethics themselves are a type of meme and that really inspiring, uplifting things are memes and that we can basically, you know, work with these kind of memes to create more of these kind of effects in our lives. Now, what that means in the big picture is something that I don't let keep me up at night. You know, and I'm engaged in constant dialogue about this kind of stuff. Go hang out on our occult if you want to participate, or on my blog, or here. You know, I'll talk about, you know, space aliens, angels, aeons, you know, whether or not there's a destiny, whether or not, you know, any of this crap is real. And I will indulge all kinds of ideas with that agnosticism that I maintain. But if we have to, like, go vote or spend money, I'm probably going to be on the atheist side.
I agree. Yeah, in practical real world terms, I totally support the atheists. But in my own inner life, I love the experience. I love, yeah, the ride.
Yeah, me too. Well, so are we coming to a good closing point, or is there something else we should hit up?
Yeah, I think that's about it.
We can talk about love.
Well, yeah, we could talk about love, especially if you know, in relation to Thelema, because the "do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." Like, if I say this Thelemic greeting to you guys, and you respond the way you're supposed to, like, I would say love, I mean, "do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law," and you would say, "love is the law, love under will." And Crowley, like, had some really interesting ideas. Like, he thought love was extremely important, like, a coefficient of the will. But in my reading of Crowley on love, he means, like, it's like the second law of thermodynamics, that, like, everything is going to fall into chaos.
Do you think that was a justification for his lifestyle, or do you think his lifestyle was an outcropping of that belief?
I think Crowley really, especially at the end of his life, and I think part of his initiatory work as a magician was to increase his ability to have greater compassion for humans, that at the end of his life, Crowley probably loved people a great deal, and probably as much as you could ever imagine anyone doing it. It's known to be a side effect of the Aberbellin working, the encounter with the HGA.
Aw, that's kind of romantic.
He was a trickster. He was
Loki.
Yeah, he would have probably tried to kiss you if he heard you say that. But he definitely was toe to toe with Victorianism. I mean, he was in an age where that was totally sex negative, that was totally repressive, that was totally like a religious theocracy. That there was kind of elite groups of academics that still knew about the Enlightenment. Mostly it had been repressed in contemporary society. And Crowley shat all over that. I mean, sometimes quite literally.
You know, like, all those awesome literature movements and art movements and even the occult, you know, I think all came about, like, all sprung out of the Victorian era. And I just think, thank God for Charles Darwin. You know what I mean? Because that's where everything fucking switched. You know, the literature switched, the art switched, fucking mind switched. What a beautiful point in human history.
You know, I tried to look it up in the list of ECG saints, like the Saints of Thelema. I didn't find it online, but I can swear that I've been to an OTO ritual where the Thelemites have their own list of saints. Mm-hmm. Nietzsche's on it.
Fuck yeah.
Pope Rodrigo Borgia is on it.
Well, that's just funny buns.
John Dee is on it. And I believe that in a recently updated list, they've added Darwin as a saint of Thelema.
You know, because of Darwin, we also have science fiction.
Yeah, well,
Darwin's awesome. We should have a whole episode about Darwin and his dad.
And there's been a lot, like, not just in comics. Reverend Grimes and I talked about it in comics, but there's been a strong relationship between science fiction and the occult. Also, L. Ron Hubbard hung out in, like, an OTO temple for, like, a year, stole the body master's wife and his boat.
Pretty much it, yeah.
But this body master I'm talking about is Jack Parsons, who, if I'm going to pick a past life, that's it. You know, officially, I don't believe in past life regression. Now that that's said, I am Jack fucking Parsons.
I think I see Caesar Augustus.
Beloved of Babylon. That's how I used to feel until I learned about Jack Parsons. Jack Parsons was a self-taught rocket scientist in Pasadena, California. He sold his soul to the...
And how cool is that, by the way? You know, this is my entire...
Yeah, self-taught
not my entire,
rocket scientist.
But a lot of my love for the man at all is self-taught rocket scientist.
Yeah, he was considered to be the equal of many, like, PhD engineers and stuff. And he has a crater on the moon named after him. He's one of the founding people of JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which is basically what makes all the rockets NASA uses. And he didn't have a degree. He did sell his soul to the devil, like, at age 13, though, according to his own magical journal. He died in an explosives accident, but by all accounts, if you went to his house, it was going to be just piles and piles of explosives all over the place, probably with, like, naked artists running around. And he spent his last years trying to summon the Whore of Babylon, who is sacred in Thelema. And he did a ton of sex magic to try to make the Whore of Babylon come into this world. And a lot of weirdos like me are totally obsessed with it and see that there's a prophetic tradition there all his own. He was Crowley's pen pal, and Crowley never liked L. Ron Hubbard. So that's another positive thing.
that is a positive thing.
But Jack Parsons, in addition to being this rocket scientist and this occult guy, he was also the leader of the Southern California science fiction scene. Like, all these really, really great contributors, like Jack Williamson, who is known to have influenced the great Asimov, was, you know... would have known Jack Parsons. And Jack Parsons was really into Jack Williamson's books and believed them to be a part of his initiatory work. And it was not that uncommon back then, like for what the Scientologists did, for people to just kind of pick a science fiction book and make a fake religion out of it.
I like to do that. I like Dune. Dune's mine.
Oh, me too. And Dune was written under the influence of magic mushrooms, by the way. I have confirmed that through research.
That's awesome. That whole book's about hallucinogens, anyway.
But what the Scientologists have done that sucks is that they don't recognize that it's pretend on some level. I mean, even if you're like a traditional occultist and you believe that you have supernatural psychic powers and that you're like really doing divine workings, you still believe that your imagination is the vehicle by which you unlock that power. You know, so like... why is it so hard for people to realize that? Why is it just because something's the imagination that it's not taken seriously?
Well, I think it's in how it's presented, because when something is artfully presented, like if I artfully present my imagination to you, you'll either get it or you won't. But if you get it, you'll love it. It's what? Like watching.
No, it's. I think it's because overwhelmingly we're ruled, at least on a day-to-day basis. In our constant interactions by an overwhelmingly Christian majority. And an acknowledging imagination to that high of a degree very much makes them go on some level, oh, this is the imaginary story I'm into.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think that's why many things are repressed. But I think that this is, you know, why is it so hard for people to get that? Because as soon as they get that, they have to go, okay, well, the Jesus thing, that's bullshit too.
Well, you know, it's funny. As an occultist, I feel like I have to answer to the atheists. Like, I see the atheists as, like, my respected colleagues, and that they have valid critiques, and they're such a tiny minority. But I see the Christians as basically as just unrefined occultists. I'm like, oh, if you could only know what glory your tradition once held.
Come back after you push some babies into an altar, then we'll talk. Mm.
Yeah, well, I think anything that gives you that kind of mental, like, high, you know, people are going to seek it.
Well, that's what I think.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And if you get that by being a Christian, you're like, oh, the Holy Spirit is in me. I feel fucking badass. I'm totally into this. Fuck yeah. Go for it. Just don't shove it down my throat. Like, leave me the hell out of it.
I would even go as far as to agree with them that most people really should get that. That's probably what it takes to get the fire lit under their ass. I just want people to know that they're engaged in an imagination experiment that...
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're never going to be willing to say that.
Yeah.
Fools. They're never going to be that's the entirety of what I'm saying, though, is that they're never going to be willing to openly
what?
Say...
But you know what is real?
Nietzsche would
even
agree
Even though they
you.
Know. I think most of them know.
Star Trek is real. All that will really happen.
Well, if Star Trek is real, then eventually humans will be cool.
Yes. That's our religion. So that Star Trek will be true.
Well, definitely my religion.
What was Gene Roddenberry in the magic at all?
I don't know. I've actually...
I like to imagine that he is.
Reverend Grimes would actually, out of the three of us, be the most knowledgeable about Gene Roddenberry. I just recently got as enthusiastic as I am. I've liked Star Trek my whole life. My dad and I watched it together. And
I watched it with my mom.
Right.
My mom was the one who had all the mystical, magical books. She had a whole collection, Time Life. She had like 20 of them.
They were great.
I think that's probably the real reason the way I am.
Well, that's a good excuse. Those books are great.
I was learning how to read on those.
We have most of them in our local public library.
They're great. They're fun.
But what do you say, Gene Roddenberry? Do you know anything? Is there
mostly he was into money. I don't think his spiritual beliefs or anything else ever really came into it. He was trying to launch a Western show, then he was trying to launch a police procedural, and then he was just looking for something different. So it was, you know, what about Wagon Train in Space? Let's just do Wagon Train in Space. And that was the whole pitch. That was the whole concept. He was a notorious kind of a notorious whore for any kind of thing the studio wanted him to do. He just, you know, took it hook, line, and sinker.
But he broke so much ground.
Sometimes good things happen anyway.
Yeah, yeah. How great that the memes found this vehicle.
He did, you know, to his credit, he did want to do some trailblazing things, but he was also very quick to roll over on his ideas. He, you know, I guess in one hand, he had so many that some of them had to pass through. You know, originally, I mean, it was very progressive for his time. Originally, he wanted the girl he was fucking, who later became his wife, to be the first officer. But I don't think it was the heads at Desilu, but CBS or whoever had Star Trek originally basically said, you can't have that and have this guy that looks like the devil. So you either have to get rid of the guy with the devil ears, or you have to get rid of a woman being in charge. One of the two. So
it just makes me imagine like an episode of Mad Men, all this shit going down.
Well, I like how they reinserted the female by just making him an incredible poonhound.
You know,
and so a female is driving the action every time.
That's definitely a huge, important part of the Star Trek mythos. I mean, to me, Captain Kirk is the ultra sex magician.
That's his true will. And to fuck alien babes.
That's exactly his true will. That's the entirety of his true will. It's to conquer that next pussy.
The original episode's not my favorite, and that's because of my own hang-ups about special effects, but I have to admit that...
It's mine. They're mine.
That when I see, you know, Captain Kirk.
My favorite of the new series is Deep Space Nine, but my favorite Star Trek is the three seasons that we got initially.
Next Gen. I love Jean-Luc Picard.
With the movies hanging out in there too, and Wrath of Khan kind of rolling over everything.
Well, yeah, no, the new. I you know, and it's funny that we're gonna end up finishing the occult episode with this. But
haven't we finished like half of our things with Star Trek?
I believe that. That everyone in the occult scene will be highly sympathetic, and in the atheist scene, to finishing up this conversation with Star Trek. Because it is such a great, an amazing story. I mean, everybody talks about Star Wars like being the ultra-modern mythic story. Well, if it was, thanks George Lucas for shitting in all of our mouths with those last three movies. It's now the prize.
It's like if there was a shitty, less entertaining Bible. That was the sequel.
The prize now goes. Yeah, it's
Bible harder.
Oh my god! Hey, seriously, he fucked us in our ass and made us clean off his dick.
And I know there's a lot of great, cool shit that still exists for Star Wars, but my eyes have been injured. That I can't see it. I can't like go read the sympathies on books.
It's painful to me even to watch the original trilogy to an extent at this point because of the shit that followed afterwards. There was a point in my life where I was very much more in the Star Wars camp than the Star Trek camp, and then those prequel things happened.
Yeah.
So
George Lucas should be made to go through the Klingon pain stick ritual.
Is that where we get a pill cue and break it up his ass? Because I think that's the ritual he needs.
Are we gonna get a restraining order for that?
Yeah, because any of us were ever going to get close to George Lucas anyway.
Everybody, this is for entertainment purposes only. If we use anybody's name, it's in a parody manner. We have no intention to violently rape anyone.
Well,
that kind of law team.
If y'all don't mind, before we close out with Black Blade by Blue Oyster Cult, I would like to indulge the audience with my holy creed. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Love is the law. Love under will.
So I see that you're about to get started. Let me do a really crazy long project.
Oh, I have this feeling that my love is none too good. It's so near at my side, don't act the way it should. Keeps calling me its master, but I feel like it's slave, hauling me faster and faster to a dirt and gritty grave.
end of time. Hey, I'm the cosmic champion, and I hold a mystic sign, and the whole world's dying. Thank you.